the thrill is gone. It's pretty much the topic of our discussion today. That's Tracy Chapman opening up B.B. King's famous The Thrill Is Gone. It's from B.B. King's incredible 1997 album, Deuces Wild. On this album, every song features a major performing artist, and Tracy Chapman is one of my favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we continue from yesterday talking about the need for this two-party dominated political system to end. The question is how and who's going to do it. Despite widespread voter dissatisfaction and the two-party system in general, dissatisfaction with, I should say, politics in general and the two-party system in particular, the Democratic and Republican parties continue to dominate and control the political machinery of the United States. They wage bruising battles to control state and national government and accept from each other. Neither party actually fears a challenge to its power and dominance. There's no change to the political matrix this election year. The Democratic and Republican parties still dominate the field of political choices, but polls have been showing intense voter dissatisfaction with the duopoly's business-as-usual politics, a growing interest in other political parties and movements, and even outright rejection of the current political model. So we continue yesterday's discussion on how these very things that are burgeoning and are playing out before our eyes, how can these things provide fertile soil for non-mainstream political parties and movements to plant or even replant new seeds? Or are we going to accept that despite what we see, and I think it is fair to say, that no third party, no independent movement is going to, quote, win this election? I think that's clear. And we still now must deal with the reality that we are in. And the reality that we are in is that someone, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, will win. What will that mean? Not for, you know, the same question about what will it mean for the country and so forth. Yes. But we're looking at what does it mean for independent, burgeoning of independent politics that will have a long-term effect of changing the political system. That's what we're talking about today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Interestingly, today I saw an article, I think it was by Bloomberg, a Bloomberg news service, that talks about the fact that an increasing number of people, they say, are considering not voting at all. And both camps are becoming more and more concerned about this because there's no accurate way to measure how many people are just not going to show up at the polls. They're saying, I've had enough. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to be manipulated. I don't want any part of this. The standards here are way beneath mine, and I'm just not going to be part of this farce. So I'm out when you guys figure out how to really engage in a process that is beneficial to people, that gives people a credible choice. You can give me a call. But the report is saying that more and more people are considering not voting. Now, that was my position for a long time. I just have not voted. And I've shared that story with you a couple of times. that this is now going on probably about 16 years or so, perhaps longer. I don't recall the exact year. But I was actually in the voting booth when I decided I'm not going to go through this. I will not be insulted this way. As I faced the ballot and the issues for a vote, a yes-no vote involving hundreds of millions of dollars described to me and known to me for the first time in the voting booth in about three sentences. And my vote was to be yes or no, to authorize these kinds of things, or to vote for judges who I don't know anything about, who are not allowed to campaign. So I'm just supposed to be reacting to the sound of their names or something. I don't know what cosmic process was supposed to happen as I was about to vote. And then it dawned on me, you know, I felt mugged right there in the voting booth. And I said, this is not going to happen to me ever again, not unless. I didn't say I'm never, ever, ever going to vote again. Not unless there is a compelling reason to vote. Sad to report, in my view, there wasn't a compelling reason from that time until now to vote. And so I don't know quite yet what I'm going to do. I have some thoughts, of course, about supporting third parties this time around. And I think it's a very good idea. But I also have some issues with third parties. And the problems that I have with the third parties is that when you look at the numbers over a pretty long time, they are not going in the right direction. And they suggest there's a sense of complacency or a sense of, you know, no sense of urgency about doing the building of a movement. Now, this was why I got so excited about the Sanders movement, about the Green Party. You know, and then you look at the numbers and you see two different things. Sanders movement took off. It took off, just like Jesse Jackson's. It took off with so much support from regular people who embraced the refreshing messages that were being shared by these movements and parties. And they outperformed themselves. Now, they didn't win in the traditional sense of winning, but I will tell you, I would go to the mat on this one. They won. They won because the objectives they had were not just met, but they were superseded. So they won. They were able to establish a foothold. They were able to coalesce interest. They were able to get people to hurdle over all of these historic barriers to working together and forming effective coalitions. They were able to capture the attention and imagination of voters. They were able to bring a whole new vision, and they were able to force the duopoly to change their stance, even if for just this one, you know, one election or so. But let's look at this last move here with the Sanders movement. I mean, 13 million votes. That is incredible. 13 million votes in such a short time. That's incredible. And it said that there was a potential here to really resonate nationwide and to galvanize people and to bring a different vision that the general population could appreciate. Never mind the simplistic reaction that we got from some quarters. Oh, he's a socialist. Oh, he's a communist. Oh, he's a pinko. No, it is about a different vision, and people invested heavily into it. And you also know my observation and my contention that the Sanders supporters have so far failed in doing a very important task. They've failed not to signal to the general public that they too are serious about this movement, and they are so serious they're not going to have even the so-called leader destroy it. So they needed to fire him. They really needed to do this in public. And this is specifically to safeguard the integrity of their movement and to make a statement that this is not going to be one of those run-of-the-mill things. It is truly a democratic, with a small d, a democratic process in which the supporters have a vested interest and an active interest in this party and in this movement, I should say, and bringing more and more people in by maintaining a show of integrity, by showing that they're going to safeguard the integrity of what they have achieved. Instead, Sanders, as we know, capitulated, betrayed this very movement that he was allegedly heading, and it's now under the, at least this is how it's being perceived, it's now under the aegis, under the wing of the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton, which is not what I thought anybody supporting Bernie Sanders would have wanted to do. All right, so in this period, I mean, we have to see things as they are. I don't think that it is realistic that we are going to find a third party really sweeping the election. It's just not going to happen. So that being a more than likely prospect, what then is the charge of movements that have begun already, or that may still be in formation, but have something important to contribute? What is the work that they're supposed to be doing now? And this being separate, in a way, from your own individual opinions about it, but it's more about talking about the big picture. What is the future for independent politics if they don't, these different movements don't see the moment we're in for what it is and really retool for the not-too-distant future? By the way, we should also keep in mind, this is not just about the presidential race. You know, this is for congressional seats. This is a big election. So it is disappointing that we're seeing, you know, the results that we're seeing so far. That's disappointing. But it is not the end. We have to figure out what's the next move. Okay, I've talked enough. 888-874-4888. Mahat, you on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family and PRN.
Thank you.
I have a couple points to make on your question. First of all, and there might be some slight or some small disagreement when I brought this up before, but first of all, we must understand where the real seats of powers are. So if we're not looking at the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and also the Bilderberg Group, which is very particular because people like Daniel Estelan, out of Spain, who did the book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, and it, for some time he was going on a yearly basis and had sources to report on what was obviously an agenda that is illegal under the Logan Act. You know, you can't bring the media titans and some of the states people
Let me just say, Maude, I don't want to cut you off here, but we have to be a bit more focused. I understand that the Bilderberg Group and so forth, these are very important things to understand. We're looking at answering a specific question today. And
right, but I had to frame... Okay.
What is the work that needs to be done?
Yes.
By people who are activists and people who are concerned about the formation of a political vehicle that allows the kinds of changes that they want to be enacted.
That's a better world. Absolutely.
So specifically, I want to mention recently
Sunday, I went to a movie, and I also got a signed copy of the book, and want to know if you've had a chance to look at this, because this is foundational in terms of changing our political system, understanding how it works. It's by Greg Pallas, investigative reporter, and the title is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I'm about two-thirds through the book, but it's outstanding, and it's a long history of the Republicans under Bush,
as an example. But you're still taking us down that road of a review of the book. I'm interested in your ideas, not a review. I'm interested in your specific ideas about the situation we're in, and in what ways do you see it possible, despite the fact it looks a little bleak, for victory for an independent movement or party? What is the silver lining here, and how do those parties or movements that intend to continue, what is the work that they have to do?
Well, the work that we have to do is we have to be fully informed about the corrupt system. So that's why I reference this whole way where millions of Black and Latino and Asian voters were and are being taken off the rolls. In addition to the fact that about weekly, if not daily, we see that there are people who can hack into electronic systems. In fact, there's Bev Harris of the Black Box Voting, and we see that Canada has paper ballots. So, you know, electronic systems can be hacked on. So to me, that's fundamental in terms of making any changes. And then once we understand, you know, once we have a firm understanding of how the system can be manipulated, then we have to come together in unity and come up with some strategies in our movement to connect all these different points, police brutality, et cetera, et cetera. And then we will have a way where we can move forward unified, hopefully, in a true revolutionary movement.
Well, people have been saying exactly what you've been saying for a while, that people have to just get together and understand the system. But I tend to think that this is ground well traveled. In what ways do we approach the same task differently?
In what ways do we approach the same task? I need you to be a little bit more specific with that.
In other words, we've been doing the same thing, and we've been talking the same thing, and the groups themselves would say we've been doing the same thing. Which means that it's whatever it is you're doing, it's not effective or as effective as it ought to be. What do you think these parties and movements should be doing now, given the fact we can tell now that no independent party, no independent movement is going to, quote, win, unquote?
Well, specifically, I would address something because I noticed that the elders have a lot of wisdom, and they usually shut aside. They're not savvy around all the social media. So I would suggest, and a lot of them still have landlines, so I would suggest even conference calls where we, you know, say put three issues, show the issues are connected, and come up with a 5 or 10 point plan, and then connect with the younger people, have them connect with the social media. That would be one specific suggestion, Utrice.
Okay. Well, thank you for putting it on the table. Thanks for calling contributing today. Desiree from New York, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air, Desiree. How are you?
Hi, Utrice. I'm well, Utrice. How are you?
I'm okay.
I've been listening, and I know yesterday a couple of people were saying, you know,
Desiree, are we having a little? Are you on speakerphone of some sort?
Oh, am I on speaker? I am not on speaker. Can
you
hear me
great.
Now?
Okay. Yes, but it sounded a little muffled. That's why.
Okay, I'll try and speak clear. I know yesterday people were saying the third parties, green parties, need to be running. Like, I think if the Green Party candidates were running a lot longer, like how Bernie Sanders was running, although he was running Democratic, but he started when he had to start, like, you know, whenever, like, I'm a little flustered because I didn't think I was going to get on right now, but I think Green Parties need time. However, they need funding, and that's a big problem. I remember you mentioned in the past week how United Nations was talking, and they were talking about what was going on shooting-wise here in the States, and how this is a problem that needs to be addressed. I agree. More information needs to be out there. People need to work together. There's somebody from Chicago who I'd like to get in contact with. I forgot his name. And he mentioned something weeks ago, and I applauded him, and I think information needs to be addressed and put out there. But I'd also would really love it if somebody came together and just made this wonderful speech, got in contact with the United Nations, and just said, hey, I want to go, I want to speak on what's going on in the United States. There's a lot of things happening. People are dying. People don't like what's going on. People don't like these candidates. The TTP, genetically modified foods, it seems like we're being railroaded here. And the people here in the United States are victims. And we need help from other countries, from our own government.
Ask you, Desiree, do you think there's a shortage of ideas? To me, it seems that there are enough really good ideas already in play. I mean, we're not lacking for ideas. But we still see that many of these independent movements are way behind. When I say way behind, I mean, they don't even have a credible shot of taking on the system the way they are. Where they are right now. So I don't.
Yes.
I would tend to think that it's not for lack of ideas of what to do or what people want done. It suggests to me that maybe it's a structural problem. And we talked about money, lack of money yesterday, and this is a very legitimate criticism, but not just of the parties or movements. It is also the case that they are cash-strapped because nobody gives them any cash. You know, we want all these things done, and we have all these high expectations of independent movements and what they ought to do, but nobody supports them, especially the people who think that, you know, they are viable, they have good ideas, and they should be part of the spectrum, you know, from which people can choose. But we don't support these movements.
Interestingly, I received a phone call actually about a half an hour ago from the Jill Stein campaign asking me to donate funds, which I said I would as soon as I get paid. So many people have given to the Bernie Sanders movement, and I think, you know, a lot of that money went somewhere that if we had the clarity or the foresight to see that this person was in the system and he has a role he needs to play, and his role was going to only get to A, not get all the way to Z, then I'm sure a lot of people would have never had donated the time and the money and the efforts that they did there and would have put it somewhere else. But I feel like there just needs to be more communication with people. One last thing, because I know there's other callers, but my boss the other day asked me, said, Des, are you going to vote? And I said, no, I'm not voting. And she said, why not? And I said, well, I said what you had said. I said, well, these candidates don't meet my standards. so I'm not going to vote for them. And she had absolutely nothing else to say but the what they always say. Well, something's got to happen because we don't want Trump. We don't want Trump in the House. And I just thought, I don't know, maybe it's ignorance, or maybe she doesn't know the information that I hear every week. So I think there's a lot. If that's just one person, there's a lot of people who are still out there. My mom too. I had a conversation with her. I'm gonna let you go, but you know what? Here's what I would say: more people need to listen to Lead's story. That's what I think.
Thank you so much for your Desiree, and for participating today. Let's go to Virginia with Walter. Hello, Walter. How are you?
Yes, hello, Utrice, Aunt Utrice, honorary Aunt Utrice. Greetings to you and the Utrice Lead listening family.
Thank you.
I think, first of all, we need to make one thing perfectly clear. The Bernie Sanders so-called movement was not an independent movement. Bernie Sanders ran as a Democrat within the Democratic Party, and therefore was eligible for Democratic money, for which he did receive. Inside of that, there was the corporate portion of the Democratic money, as also acceptance by the mainstream media. So part and parcel, he had mainstream media exposure, which allowed him to get independent individual money because he had more access to common information channels. So I think we need to know that at the outset. Plus, there was sort of like what I call the side door money from, communities that he's a part of, one of which is the Jewish community, which is going to support him, much like the African-American elite community supported Barack Obama, i.e. Oprah Winfrey. So we need to be clear about those two things, access to the mainstream media, and then, of course, as you had noted before, money, and as your previous caller had noted before, money. So I think, barring that, the third-party, independent type of organizations or campaigns are suffering predominantly from money due to lack of mainstream exposure and also, to their credit, not taking large corporate donations.
Okay, let's give you a lot of points for deconstructing the problem. What, therefore, do you think is a workable idea in the time that we're in? Just on the cusp of election day, as a matter of fact, and we know what the lay of the land is. Is there reason, you think, for independent movements, whatever they may be, to use this time, because the writing is on the wall for them in terms of winning any major office and winning the major office? It's clear they will not win. What is the work that they have to do immediately and continue doing?
Excellent question. And I think the answer has lain, in several campaigns over the last two election cycles, I guess, in the last 4 to 8 years. And that is to build locally, to build on legislative municipal councils, city councils, state legislatures, all the local type of elections where you would want to run third-party candidates and start to work again and build from the grassroots level up, much like we saw the $15 an hour movement that sprouted from the lady who's the socialist out in Seattle. Her name escapes me right now. But having the small victories so that you have small raindrops that would basically converge into streams, which would then converge into rivers. I think it's sort of like trying to make a basketball chart from half court versus going for the layups. We need to work on the short game before we work on the long game. And I think that's where the building needs to occur. It will take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But by having those victories on local levels, on state levels, and then perhaps on some congressional seats will help start pointing the direction for a presidential campaign.
Are these movements indicating to you right now that they're having some trouble? Or do you see them just, barreling ahead, no matter what, frittering away perhaps really precious resources that they have instead of saying, okay, we will maintain our position philosophically. We'll do our best to proselytize, to get the word out to people about who we are and what we had aimed to accomplish and still aim to accomplish in this election, but that we also have work to do. I get the sense that there is a resistance to facing reality. This is the reality. The reality is you're not going to win. You're not going to win. So rather than go through the motions frittering away the precious resources that you have, this is the time to change strategy and say, all right, we're going to get really, as you said, and I think quite correctly so, we will get really into grassroots movement and grassroots organizing and build there. We're still carrying on with the theme for our presidential campaign, but we are actually retooling and reorganizing. Do you see any hint at all that this is a consideration of these movements at this time?
Well, specifically focusing on the Green Party, I would say no. And I think that the Green Party is basically trying to say, listen, we have a national election here in the presidential election. We are looking for name recognition and exposure. However, what folks feel to realize is, you know, they've run in the last three national presidential campaigns with pretty much the same results. So you're not really seeing a large movement of the needle, okay, in terms of the percentage of the votes that they're getting in these national presidential elections. So what would need to occur is, as you would say, yeah, they're not going to fall back and say, okay, we're pulling out of the race, because, again, they need the exposure to help, in their sense, build the movement, because this is the large media campaign. This is sort of like the Super Bowl, okay? So we need to have a commercial in the Super Bowl to give us some legitimacy, okay? And instead of having a one-minute commercial, we've got a 15-second commercial. But people need to know that we're there. So with that said, yes, absolutely. And the background, which needs to be, in my view, and as you noted, larger than what's happening in the foreground on this presidential election, where we need to really, 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 really focus our efforts, our money, and go from alternative media to start pushing into the mainstream media, so that we just don't look like, you know, a hippie, or in the case of Dr. Stein, you know, a hippie protester from the 60s who's basically focused on one or two major issues and is not seen as presidential. What needs to happen is a pullback, as Gary Null would say, for folks to say, look, you know, we are in your communities, we have been in your communities, and we're trying to do a lot with a little, and we need your help. But what we're also trying to do is build trust. Okay, what they've done is they've leaped over the speed of trust from the standpoint that people don't really know them, don't know what they're doing, and don't really have any familiarity with them, you know, those that aren't in those specific communities. Okay, I'm talking about the mainstream populace. So that, in my view, is what needs to occur.
All right. Very strong presentation today, Walter. Thank you so much for participating.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Let's go to Wilt. Wilt from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, my dear.
Oh, I thought, I'm sorry. Okay. My eyes are not working. That's what it is. It's Willie. Hello. You're on the air.
How are we?
We are fine.
We're fine, I think.
What do you think about the period that we're in? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, the period that we're in right now, this close to the actual election day, November 8th, what should these smaller or movements of parties, what should they be doing? What's the message? Given the fact, I mean, we have to face some realities here. It is no surprise come November the 8th that they aren't elected to the White House. We shouldn't be surprised about that. So okay. What should be their position right now? What should they be doing?
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I really don't care what they do. I have no interest in that. Because, look, it doesn't matter what they do. We're not. This is not for us, period. Because we are used to do the heavy lifting. I'm tired of that. We have to begin to create something for ourselves. And we already... We already have these things in place. For example, you're talking about, we need to get people aware and let people know and this kind of stuff. Okay, we have PRN. We already have something in place. What if Gary Null wasn't so visionary to create this? Now, our job should be, you know what? Let's Let's go to work, man. That's what I'm doing. I'm building. I have T-shirts, and I have my circles of friends. I have people in Trinidad, Jamaica, all over the world. This CNN Plus. So we don't need regular media, corporate media. We don't need it because we have this. And with just the people listening to this, we're already worldwide. You see what I'm saying? Now, let's say we want to get political. Okay, we'll just send $5 a month. How much is that? That's $1 a week. You see what I'm saying? We would put this in a fund set up by PRN for some candidate that we want to select and have him on the have him up front for us or her. You see what I'm saying? Well, we won't tell Gary this because he has too much work to do. But we raise enough money just in case we need the regular media. We have the money's there. However, by then, we will be the media. You understand what I'm saying? If the listeners right now are willing to do the work, we talk and talk and analyze and that kind of stuff. But what are you doing? What are you really doing?
Okay, but bring this same analogy. How do you apply this same analogy? Because you're saying, in effect, people have to fund their liberation. They have to fund interests. They have to take an active role in financially supporting those things that they say they agree with or they see as being beneficial to the broader community. Okay, I get that point. Now, okay. We still have to do some kind of work between now and November 8th and beyond. What is a Green Party to do? What is any independent movement to do with what they have, what they're working with? What is their charge, as you see it, between now and Election Day and beyond?
I have no interest in those parties because we are.
You have no interest in that at all.
We are secondary people in those parties. I have no interest in it. Now, what part? There's a group that I have the greatest admiration for, even though it's a criminal, satanic, and manipulative group of people. But any office you seek, you better go sit and talk to them. It's called APEC. APEC. You're going to talk to them. Well, I'll vote just like I normally vote. We have our own APEC. Let's say we got 40 some odd million of us in this country. Okay. You want our vote? I tell you like you tell the nation is that. Listen, we're going to have to watch you, particularly. Not that Jewish people are bad, but considering the historical record of what that gang, WJC, JDL, all of them, what they've done to the nation, Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, and this brother and the nation has been working in our community for over 40, 50 years, just like you have, and you're going to attack them and dismiss them? No. If you want our vote, you're going to have to go to them. So what I forget, all of us should write Minister Farrakhan's name in general election. So if they see 40 million of us, you're going to have to go before them. Before we even consider talking to you. You see what I'm saying? I'll vote for whatever you want, but that's what I'm going to do. Because you can't go to the nation with no foolishness. You don't play with them. You respect the nation. You see what I'm saying? Because, for example, Mr. Dunn, he went to some church and told them that the question was asked, because I really can't listen to this guy. And the question was asked, what is he going to do? He's going to implement more.
Let's stay on point, Willie. Mm-hmm. What is it? Sorry. You said that you have no interest at all in the work that the parties have to do. That's their problem. They'll have to figure it out. But that you say the most important thing is for people to realize that anything, including a third party, including an independent political movement, if it serves your purpose, your duty is to support it. That's really what you're saying.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm sure that it will begin to resonate in the other callers and we'll have some reaction to it. Thanks, Willie, for your call today.
Okay, next.
Thanks. Let's talk to Lawrence from New York. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Lawrence. You're on the air.
How are you doing? This is Chris from Lawrence. Good afternoon to the listeners and staff here at PRN.
Thank you so much for that. It's very, very gracious of you.
And to your question today is, what should we be looking to do moving into the election and thereafter?
Yes.
I would definitely look to what they do when they're upset about something. And by they, I mean people in positions of power. If they want to hurt someone, they cut off your money while making more money for themselves. And even if it's not a financial, even if it's the direct effect they have on you isn't financial, they'll smear your reputation. If a professor at a college says something about Israel, those students get on Twitter and Facebook and they try to get that teacher, they try to, you know, curse that teacher's name in some way. Even to the point where they want him to be brought up on charges or brought in for a hearing of some kind. If the governor doesn't, if Hillary Clinton doesn't like the BDS movement, or the governor doesn't like what's happening in the Carolinas, he calls for a boycott of our tax dollars in those places. And I think that we need to take that lesson and boycott the companies that don't support our causes. I think when you're marching, I think we should be looking down at our sneakers, looking at our pocketbooks and jackets, and looking at those companies that we support, and we should be demanding that those companies support us, or we're going
All right.
to take our dollars away.
All right. So you're outlining what people can do. The question on the table, though, is what are these movements that many people have been supporting for a while now? And it looks, I mean, we can't put our heads in the sand about this. They're not going to win the presidential race, for example. But that doesn't mean
they're not going to.
That their political agenda is shot to hell. I mean, there is something still in this time, now that, you know, that we are still in the feverish pitch of a presidential election. What do they do now for long-term benefit, even though, and I discussed that we have to have different ideas about what winning is, all right? Winning may not necessarily mean that you're in the White House. Winning may mean that you have changed the political landscape. You have advanced the cause of a broader spectrum of people than any other medium or any other party. So what is the work that these parties, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and other parties that people may be supporting, what is the work that they should be doing now, given what we see is going to happen? We can predict it's going to happen.
Well, I would say the first thing they all need to do is hand over the power, if they have such a thing, hand over the face, hand over the brand, if you will, to younger people. I'm 39, not even my age. I would advise they put somebody maybe 25, 26, like a fresh graduate who doesn't have, you know, depending on their school loans. You want somebody who doesn't owe too many people at a particular age. I think they should first hand it over to young people and make it clear that these young people are going to lead the way. Tell them that they can be trusted with it and help them and teach them. Tell them they can do it and then give them the information. Don't hold it over their head so that they have to cling to you like a parent holds on to their child till they're 35. But and I think that right now they should be telling the younger generation that this party is theirs. They have some foundation that they can hand over, but they have to be willing to go to these colleges and do that and talk to them about things that matter to them, their school loans, their car loans, you know, the fact that their parents have to co-sign, you know. These are things that mean something to them right at this very moment and that are going to mean something to them when they graduate. They have to hand it over to the young people. They have to stop telling them to vote for the lesser of two evils. And, you know, for any one of these movements to move on, I think they definitely have to be ready for what some of these younger people are saying. They're not asking for people to reform systems. They're asking for some of these systems to be completely uprooted and done away with. They're not asking for police reform. They're asking to get rid of the word police, the police department, and the money that goes to them. And that's the voice that they want. That's the voice that they have. And I don't think that when we come in and go, oh, retraining and, oh, we're going to sit with, when we start using words like platform and negotiate and reform, you lose them. They go right back into their cell phones or they walk away like, yeah, she's a joke or yeah, he's a joke. So I think going forward, the Green Party or the Libertarians or whoever it's going to be, they have to be willing to let young people who have the energy, who have the time, they don't have two or three children, and a 60-hour, 70-hour work week, they can actually go out and reach out to new people and relate to the voters who are just coming of age, not the people who are my age who... I'm 39, and people actually do still believe that they should be voting for the lesser of two evils. And they don't need us. Like, I don't even know if you can change their minds. So I think
let me ask you, would it be a major blow to you psychologically or emotionally if, let's say, the Green Party does not win?
To me?
Mm-hmm.
No, if they don't win, why would that even? I don't know if that's the Green Party winning. I don't even know that Bernie Sanders winning. I mean, Barack Obama winning didn't change my life at all. I had to do the same overtime. I had to pay off the same debts, and I got to work at the same job. So I don't know what's changed, even with him, let alone the Green Party that I know even less about. So I've never had an expectation of them. I've just had some loose awareness of their existence. And if you speak to my son, he knows even less about them. And so if you're not going to come to my job, because I can understand that the workforce can be a bit scattered at times, they should definitely be at these colleges talking to these young people about what matters to them. Because if the Green Party doesn't get nominated, it's almost like if a tree falls in the forest, doesn't make a sound, or They won't even know. They won't even know that the Green Party was protesting. Bernie Sanders had the press, and maybe the Green Party's not going to get the press, or maybe whatever new party we come up with is not going to get the press. But if you go to the colleges, if you go to even the high schools, and don't just ask them for your vote, just go and share some information with them initially. Don't just show up when you're asking for something. They got to show up and just offer something and just walk away. Don't ask you to join you, or don't ask them to join you. Don't ask them for any money initially. Just offer something.
But,
don't just walk up to people and
do
like an information rape.
We got the comment yesterday that the voter also has a role mm-hmm. to play, and the voter or prospective voter has also fallen down on the job. Becoming some person who believes that it's the job of the party always to come to them, and it relieves them of the burden of doing for themselves the work that they ought to do as a conscientious voter, which is to seek the information, whether people come to you with information or not. So how does that factor into your argument?
I don't know that's a justified position to hold against a voter. I mean, I've had conversations with people who say when the mortgage crisis took place, right? Oh, you know, people should have read their mortgage papers. People should have known what they were getting into. you know, it's like expecting. Granted, there's a valid reason to understand completely what you're signing when you sign a contract. I agree with that, and in theory, that makes perfect sense. But in practical everyday life, I don't have evidence that that's how we respond to life. And so, if you have someone who was a politician or who wants to be a politician, they should be making a conscious effort to educate people about politics. And the same way your teacher's job is to teach you math so that you can take a test and show them, you know, that you have some knowledge of it at this point. But there is no direct path to, you know, political consciousness in this country. Usually it comes after people get victimized in some way through their medical benefits or through being fired at a job or having a union sell them out. Or some sort of, you know, somebody's neighborhood or somebody's town gets destroyed by a fracking company. They come to it in a reactionary stage of their life, not through an education, not from a point of being educated into it. And so I don't think I agree we should seek out knowledge, I don't know if it's fair to hold them completely accountable when the people who have the knowledge aren't making a conscious effort to teach others. But then we say to them, you should know, or you should learn. People don't even know what question to ask or where to start sometimes. So to ask them, it's like asking, especially in the way it's set up now, where you don't know if, as an independent, if you can vote in a primary. You don't know if the Electoral College is just going to completely... I mean, it's so spired and splintered that I don't know if it's fair that you can't ask a banker to describe to you what a derivative. They couldn't explain derivatives. And this is their field. And here we are, politicians can't communicate to us what the problems are and how to fix them. They can tell us, oh, banks are bad, you know, and we should be using renewables. It, you know, great, but we who, America? If America does it, but China does it, are we okay at that point? So they have to find some, I think it's a design issue. They need to find some way to communicate it. I'm not saying simply, but effectively and fluidly. And I think the diligence to educate is on their part. And I haven't seen it. I really haven't. I mean, going out to a demonstration doesn't necessarily inform voters of what it is you can do for them if you're elected.
You certainly have accounted for yourself today in the ideas that you have put forward and the information you have shared. I thank you so much for that, because we really need to be thinking at this level. We really need to be organizing ourselves differently. We don't need to repeat patterns that just don't win. We need to, from time to time, just take a step back and reorganize, study things, talk to people, find out what it is that they want done and what they hope.
And respond.
That's exactly. So thank you so much.
I'm sorry, I know I have to go, but let me just say to the Haitian people, my mother's Haitian, and surprisingly, they support Hillary in this country.
Colonialism and imperialism, they do damage to the brain, you know. They get people to think,
ma'am,
that the things that are being done in their interest, and that's not the case at all. Thanks so much for your call today. And that brings us to the end of the program today. A fascinating array of opinions, all of them very, very important to hear, and all of them offering something of a solution. And that's the whole point of this discussion. Tomorrow, of course, is Free Your Mind Friday, and the forum is open to whatever it is you want to talk about, but this was a more targeted discussion today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, and I mean this from my heart, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.